Taking a look at some of the mysteries of the plant kingdom now as we visit with Ken Drews. Larry Mueller here. Ken Drews, Gardens in New Jersey, is the author of many award-winning books, including The Natural Garden and Ken Drews, The Passion for Gardening, and his newest book, beautiful book. It's called Plantthropology, The Myths, Mysteries, and Miracles of My Garden Favorites. It's published by Clarkson Potter. I'm really pleased to have him with us today to talk about his book and to certainly answer your questions. So we're kind of going from vegetables to flowers here now, with Ken's more a flower guy than a vegetable guy. So think in terms of flowers and think in terms of mysteries associated with them as we visit with him. You can join us, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Ken Drews, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
I tell you what, this is a beautiful book. There's not only is there some breathtaking photography in this book, you've got history, you've got biology, economics.
Mysteries, miracles, myths. I try to cover it all.
How did you happen to come to write this book?
Well, I think one of the main reasons is I'd like people to think of plants more seriously and to therefore think of the world and the earth and conservation more seriously. And I know that when people come to visit my own garden who are not gardeners, they kind of see the whole thing as one big green mess. But when I start telling them about some of the remarkable stories, and there's stories behind every single plant, plants that started wars, plants that can help cure cancer, you tell them the stories and the plants become individuals. And that's one of the great secrets to gardening, and I hope it's going to help people take care of the earth too.
Yeah, and you've got some wonderful stories, and just out of your own garden, my goodness. I was kind of amazed as I was reading through the book, and I have to tell you, I didn't finish the book yet, but I certainly plan to do it. One of the interesting characters you talk about in the book, people, was Sir Joseph Banks.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an interesting guy.
Well, he was one of the early plant explorers, and he went with Captain Cook to discover what they thought was going to be called Banksia, but it ended up being Australia. And a lot of people have heard of Mutiny on the Bounty or seen the movie, and they don't really realize that that whole trip of the Bounty was to get breadfruit, and Banks backed that trip. He paid for it himself. So we think of Mutiny on the Bounty and the story, but we don't realize that the point of that was to get plants. Because in those days, searching for new plants, especially in the days before refrigeration, plants and spices and herbs, those were as good as gold. They were worth their weight in gold, and some of them still are.
Yeah, some of them still, they certainly are. And I'm going to ask you about those, but just for our listeners, tell us how you've organized your book. And by the way, Plantthropology, did you come up with that name?
Yeah, that's a made-up word.
It's a cool
it's
word, I love it.
Anthropology with a PL in front of it.
I love it.
Oh, I'm glad, and I'm glad you can say it. I hope more people can say it, too. Plantthropology. I think it's easy to say. In the book, there's explorers like Banks, people who risk their lives to find new plants. There's a chapter on scent and how scent triggers memory. Scent and memory in our brains are right next to each other, which is why sometimes you smell something and remember your grandmother. There's a chapter on medicinal plants. There's a part on poison. There's a chapter on mathematics and geometry, and I didn't know anything about that when I started, except I noticed there were things in plants, especially like the seed head of a sunflower. There were these spirals of seeds, and why? So I went to find out, and I share that in the book.
And the photography in the book is really stunning.
Oh, thank you so much.
Did you do the photography, some of it yourself?
Or? I did all but about 6 pictures. There's 450 pictures in the book.
I'm telling you, it really, really, really is stunning. Well, I tell you what, let's answer a few questions. And by the way, maybe you've got a question about plants. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. You've got so many interesting little things in your book, stories that relate to plants.
Mm-hmm.
There was a war fought over a plant?
There's actually been more than one war fought over plants. There were the nutmeg wars. I don't think anyone knows about the nutmeg wars, but the Dutch found nutmeg on one island, and they eventually fought with the natives of the island and wiped them out. But probably the best known or most famous wars fought over a plant were for the opium poppy.
Yeah.
And the British at the time in the 1830s and 40s were the largest drug cartel in the world. And they introduced opium to the Chinese, and that one, and finally one out of every four adult males in China were addicted to opium. And the Chinese tried to stop the British, and they had two wars, and they were not too successful against the greatest navy in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing a story. Another led to the collapse of a European superpower, another plant.
Yes, that's the tulip. And at one time, the tulip, the whole, well, in Holland, the entire stock market was not based on gold or on dollars, it was, or guilders, it was based on the tulip. And people traded tulip futures, because the tulips were incredible at the time. They had remarkable variegations and stripes, which we know now were caused by a virus. So these plants were not very stable, and they were selling plants for what would be the equal of a mansion in downtown Amsterdam. And finally, the stock market collapsed and the economy collapsed.
What are you, I'm talking about the value of plants. What is the most valuable blossom
today
in the world? Yeah.
I think actually that probably the crocus, Crocus sativa, which is the source of...
Oh, saffron.
Saffron, right. The I guess it's an herb. I was thinking spice herb, but maybe it's a spice. Mm. But that's the anthers of a crocus that actually you could probably grow in Wisconsin with a lot of care, but you won't make your money on it. But they do farm it, and it's about equal to the value of gold per pound.
That's absolutely amazing. Well, talk a little bit more about scent. You cover a lot in your book, but tell us a bit more about scent and us humans.
Well, fragrance is just, I'm just wild for it. And I go from plant to plant, and usually we kind of smell things the same, but there are certain plants like the calycanthus, the spice bush. Some people think it smells like bubblegum. Some people think it smells like whiskey barrels. It smells different to everyone. But when I try to describe scents, there's very few words for fragrance. People say sweet. Something smells sweet, but sugar doesn't have a fragrance.
No.
So it's kind of weird. It's hard to describe. And it's also fun to try to say, well, a lily kind of smells like clove, maybe a little wintergreen. But scent and memory, as I mentioned, are very close to each other in our brains. And when I smell certain plants, especially lilies, I just, or lilacs, my goodness.
Lilacs, yes.
I smell lilacs, and I think of my mother, and I'm taken back to a Mother's Day when they usually bloom many, many years ago. Just one sniff and I'm back.
I wish you could come to Wisconsin sometime about that time of the year and visit our University of Wisconsin Arboretum.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are many, many, many lilacs, hundreds of lilac trees. And it's they have thousands and thousands of people come Mother's Day time to... Just I like just to go over there and wander.
Breathe.
I mean,
and inhale, right? And the colors.
Yes.
And a great thing about lilacs, too, is that deer don't eat them.
Yeah, deer don't eat them. That's right. Well, another plant that I saw as I was paging through the book, I stopped because it was another plant that brought scent to mind to me. And I'm trying to remember the Latin name, but it's essentially tobacco plants.
Mm-hmm.
Those are lovely plants. Not the tobacco we smoke, but talk about those plants a little bit.
Well, that's Nicotiana.
Nicotiana, that's right.
And the tobacco that people smoke is very similar to the ones that we grow. They bloom, you know, you see the flowers on them. Sometimes they're small, sometimes they're a little bit larger. But they're very fragrant, mostly in the evening and into the night, because they're night pollinated. They're pollinated by moths. So that's an interesting thing about a lot of plants, even a related plant, which are the petunias. You may not notice that a petunia has a fragrance, but check it out at 5 o'clock at night, and you'll realize that it does. It has a very strong clove and, again, wintergreen fragrance. And a lot of those plants that are like that, especially white-flowered plants, they attract moths to see them at night. Some plants are even bat-pollinated. Nicotianas are great. Don't eat them.
No, don't eat them. But they are wonderful. And frankly, I guess I like them because in evening, as evening approached, and just to go outside and sit on the deck or the patio and have that aroma suddenly, that scent suddenly come to your nose. Mm. It's a wonderful, a wonderful experience. And you actually propagate those somehow. You talk about that a little bit in your book, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, well, if you've grown Nicotiana, and many people have, of course, and even in Wisconsin, maybe one or two plants might come up from a seed that managed to live through the winter, and you'll notice that it's not the color that you may have planted. And over time, the Nicotiana hybrids will revert to one that's kind of a mauve color, kind of a dull color. But I like brown flowers. I like tan flowers. So year after year, I've been selecting the plants that have the darkest flowers and saving the seeds from those and sowing those. And I've gotten pretty close. I'm about to brown sugar now, I think. Maybe I'm close to tobacco in color. That's a good idea. I need a name for that plant.
You need a name for it. You have an early memory in your book of a walk with your mother in the woods. And that particular walk sort of set your love toward flowers, did it not?
I suppose it did. Towards flowers, definitely. Well, maybe my fascination with plants, with growing plants and their leaves and their flowers and their forms and the thrill of nurturing a plant. To me, it's so exciting. I don't know why. Everyone doesn't feel that way, but I'm sure that your listeners do. But yes, we just happened across a jack in the pulpit in the woods, and she told me the name, and I'm sure I didn't even know what she was talking about, a pulpit, a jack. But she lifted up that hood, if you've ever seen them, and there was a little jack inside. And, you know, really, that was it. If you did that with kids today, I think they wouldn't be throwing themselves at the video games. You know, if you take a kid outside before he or she's 3 or 4 years old and just show them some of the wonderful things that are outdoors, what's more fascinating than that?
Yeah, you actually write about that, too. I think you were in England and so watching some third graders outside.
No, that was in Massachusetts.
Oh, Massachusetts. I'm sorry. In New England.
Yeah, New England. I go to some public gardens around the country, and a lot of them have children's gardens now, and that usually means that there's a lot of plastic and bright colors, and kids like it, but you don't need that. And I was just watching some kids take a tour, and they were having a discussion on which tree was which based on the shape of the leaf, and they were comparing them all by themselves, just having this wonderful almost debate. And I thought, this is the way to do it. You don't need those plastic slides and little cottages with gnomes. Just show them nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there are so many things I can talk with you about here. The one thing has to do with the signatures on the Declaration of Independence, and even older documents are still readable today. What was the partnership between insects and trees to create such long-lasting ink?
Had you ever heard of that?
No.
I was surprised. Well, ink for many, many, many years, until pretty recently, was made from oak trees, but it was actually made from the galls on oak trees, because there's different kinds of wasps that will inject an egg into the tissue of an oak tree. It doesn't harm the tree, either the leaves or the stems, and they grow these growths, which we call galls, and the galls were harvested because they had a lot of tannin from the oak trees, and they were mixed with different things like iron oxide and actually human urine, and they made ink out of it. It was brown when it went on the paper, or actually on the parchment, and then it turned black over time, and even the Declaration of Independence was made with oak gall ink, with oak gall ink.
That's an amazing story, and why don't these stories get? Why aren't these stories told more often?
I don't know. I'm doing my best.
You sure are. Well, you talk about your own garden, and you've kind of a delightful segment there where you're talking about walking around your garden and looking at each individual plant. Tell us about your garden, by the way.
Well, my garden is an island in a river, which sounds so romantic, but you can't tell it's an island, really, except today, actually, it might flood, so then we'll know it's an island, but you get to the island on one-lane bridge, and you get off it on another one-lane bridge, and I don't think the drivers even realize it. They probably just think it's inconvenient because they have to wait and be patient, but it's an island in a river in the northwest corner of New Jersey, so it's very exciting because it does flood from time to time. And it's odd. It's a quirky piece of land. It's about 2.6 acres, and about an acre and a half is garden. But I could use a little more sun, I think. And I have weeds, and I have deer, and we have bear. But I'm mostly growing as many different things as I possibly can and trying to make it look good, too, which can be done. So it, in a way, it's a zoo of plants, which is what we call a botanical garden, but it's just a garden. It's my garden.
And these are basically the kinds of plants you talk about in your book. There are some exotic plants, certainly, in your book, but you talk about the plants that you love.
Yes, I talk about the plants that I love, and I talk about the plants that fit in the book, because, as I said, every plant has a story. It's really incredible. Every plant has a story that I can come across. And so many of the plants that are in the book and the plants that I grow are plants that are very familiar to everyone. I mean, tulips, everybody knows about tulips and Nicotiana and poppies and oak trees. So these are not really the, you know, you might imagine that if we went to Madagascar, we'd find some really fantastic stories about some unusual plants we could never grow. But these are plants in the garden. Plants in our gardens have incredible stories, too.
What is the divine proportion, and how does it show up in nature? You talk about that in your book.
Well, that's a tough one to talk about on the radio. It's even hard to talk about in the book. But there, you may have heard of the Fibonacci numbers, and maybe you haven't, but I'll try to do this. If you take 0 and 1, add them together, you have 1. And if you take 1 and 1 and add it together, you have 2. And if you take 2 and 1 and add it together, you have 3. And if you take 3 and 2 and add it together, you have 5. And this is a sequence of numbers. And the ratio between one number and the second number is 1 to 1.618. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
And that ratio shows up everywhere. It shows up in plants. It's the angle of the leaves around the stem of a plant. It's the relationship of seeds on a sunflower seed head. There's arcs in one direction with a number of seeds and arcs in another direction a number of seeds, and those ratios are, again, 1 to 1.618. And on a pine cone, if you ever look at the spirals on a pine cone, again, the scales on the pine cone have that same ratio. And that ratio was used, it's called the golden mean sometimes, or the golden section. It's been used in art for thousands and thousands of years, kind of coincidentally. And I know there's an ancient Roman thing that I came across that said if you find a potential partner, who's the distance between the person's navel and the top of his head and the navel and the ground, if the ratio is 1 to 1.618, that will make a good partner for marriage. It's amazing. And that evolves into a spiral, the spiral of the chambered nautilus, and even the spiral of the stars and the Milky Way. They're all the same ratio. And these things were, the original ratio was discovered in the 1400s and 1500s, and Leonardo da Vinci imagined that the spiral of leaves around a stem were so that every leaf would get rain from above and get sunlight from above. Because if you ever look straight down on the stem, the leaves are notching around the stem in a spiral.
Yeah.
And from the top first leaf until you reach the next leaf that's directly below it, the number of turns in relationship to the number of leaves is 1 to 1.618. Amazing.
It's amazing. And you illustrate it well in your book with the wonderful photography that you have.
Thank you. That was one of the biggest challenges, try to communicate that. But I'm glad you think that I did. I show people how to make the spiral and how to figure out and show them, as you said, the illustration of these different relationships.
Well, I tell you, it's a lovely book you have here, and you talk about the fact that, let's see, how shall I put this? You talk about your favorite flowers. I was going to ask you what your favorite flower was, but then I read what you said in the book, but I'll ask it anyway because I think it was a good answer that you gave.
Well, today I'd say it's the next one I meet that I don't have. Sometimes it's the one that I'm looking at until I turn my head and look at another one. People do ask me that question, and I don't think I have a favorite flower. It's like almost asking, you know, which of your children is your favorite. Even if you know, don't tell. Keep it to yourself. But I don't know. There's so many new plants I meet all the time. I have favorites, I'd say, but I don't have a favorite.
Have you ever visited Wisconsin for pleasure or for tour?
Yes, lecturing? I've been to Madison and seen the prairies there at the university.
Oh, so you have
Curtis Prairie.
So you have been to the Arboretum.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some wonderful plants and plant settings here in Wisconsin, certainly in Madison. Well, I'm glad that you made that trip. For those who thinking about your book, Plantthropology, what do you tell them? Why should they buy this book?
Well, it would make a lovely gift for the holidays, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure.
If you love plants, I think that you'll love this book. And if you have a friend who loves plants, it's a great gift. And even more, if you have a friend who doesn't get it yet, I think that there's enough sensational things in the book, exciting, unusual facts. Anybody who likes that kind of, I hate to say trivia, but the kind of trivial facts, it's a great pursuit. You know, it'll be a lot of fun, and the pictures are wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And as I said, it's to help people take another look. And we're always attracted to things like the spotted owl. You know, if it's got two eyes, we pay attention to it, and then we can save the redwoods. But with plants, they don't have eyes, and they don't move around quite so fast. So I'm hoping that some of these stories will get people to care more about plants and more about the earth.
Thank you, Ken, very much. Appreciate it.
Larry, it's been great to talk to you. I want people to visit my website if they can for more information, kendruse.com.
D-R-U-S-E.
Right, kendruse.com. And just have a wonderful winter and a wonderful spring.
Thank you very much. Ken Drews, author of the book Plantthropology. I tell you what, it is a wonderful book. Plantthropology, The Myths, Mysteries, and Miracles of My Garden Favorites. Pleasure to have him with us, and we'll probably have him back again another time for another topic. Monday, we'll talk personal fitness with Dustin Maher and also Apple computers. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.